bringing Glenn Healy, our NHL analyst, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Glenn, maybe I'm expecting a little too much, but I'm finding it awfully hard to get into the Ducks Nashville game, and not that their sole concern is making sure that I'm engaged and interested in the game, but maybe it is just the Ducks. I have a hard time working up any sort of feeling for them. Even Ryan Kesler, who I detest.
You know, you're talking to an original Anaheim Mighty Duck right here. This breaks my heart.
I'm sorry. If I'd known that, I never would have said this.
I'm on the wall of their dressing room as an original Duck. I never talked to anybody in the organization. I never, ever got a sweater. Nothing. I was a Duck for about 20 minutes and then became a Tampa Bay Lightning and then a New York Ranger. So,
wow.
I don't take any offense to this at all. And actually, you know, when they built that rink, it was like the Taj Mahal, marble, and it just looks so absolutely beautiful. It's like a borderline dump now.
Yeah,
right.
Like, do some work to the arena, would you? I got the same feelings as you. It is somewhat ironic that when the Ducks first came into existence, Paul Fenton was the guy who helped build them, and then he went to Nashville and he built them, and now there's two teams that he's built, and here they are in the semifinals. But I'm with you. You know, traffic concerns, maybe you get there in the second period, maybe you don't. It's just there's a lot about it that I don't even think NBC wants to do their games. So that being said, it was still a pretty darn good hockey game last night.
Yeah, that being said, they may well win the Stanley Cup.
Yes.
The Bruce McNall era, as you mentioned, Steve, and I live that too.
Well, it was fun while it lasted.
Well, we went from wearing yellow sweaters, yellow pants, having no games televised, having maybe 8,000 in the seats, a team full of knuckleheads. We were a lot of fun to watch if you like fighting. And then all of a sudden this McNall comes in and Gretzky comes in and we had, you know, Meet the King night at the Brown Derby in Hollywood. And there was paparazzi and Neil Diamond and Paul Anka sang at it. And President Reagan was there, John Candy. It was just like, what, is that Tom Hanks? Yes, it is. Wow. It was the who's who of Hollywood just by making one owner the owner and making one player really popular with their team.
It would have all been perfect had he not stolen the money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that's the small flaw.
Small
in that.
Flaw.
One small thing. I recall one night he had I think it was a Bentley, and he actually had like a computer and a television in his car. And we were walking out of the forum, and I had a black Ford Escort with no air conditioning, which is the perfect car for California.
Beauty.
And I said to him, let's switch cars. And he threw the keys at me. So the first thing I thought of is, well, you better catch the keys, because if you don't, then you're not going to play tomorrow night. And the second thing was, there's no way I can take this car to my house. It'd just be stolen by the morning. But those are good times. They were fun times.
It was, I don't want to go too far down that road, but it was remarkable. I got to say, I was as bamboozled by him as anybody. So I wasn't the guy saying, hang on, watch out for this guy. But, you know, he was remarkably charming. He still is. You know, I saw him a couple of years ago. He's still a very charming, convincing guy. And he did pull that off in Los Angeles. Again, he did it under false pretenses financially, but he did kind of flip a switch and turn everything upside down, and then they handed him they handed him the keys to the league. You know, he was the chairman of the board of governors.
Well, I can recall a team meal in Winnipeg one night, and he pulled out his credit card to pay for it. And the girl had never seen a credit card like this. You know, you get your black card, your gold card, your whatever they have for different credit cards. She'd never seen one. And basically, he told her, he said, well, this card, you better run it through, and if you don't, this card could buy the restaurant and fire you. So make it happen. Okay.
What a nice guy.
That's enough instruction for me.
Hopefully,
got this figured out. Yeah.
Hopefully she got a great tip.
Hey Glenn, in what we've seen so far of these two series, I just wonder, is there a game, the Game 7 hangover? Do you think that was a factor for the Ducks in Game 1 and for Pittsburgh in Game 1?
Oh, yeah. You've got a new dance partner. And you think about 2 weeks of absolutely breaking down every element of a team, how they break the puck out of the zone, what they do on their power play, their goaltenders' tendencies, the defense tendencies. And then, you know, you've got to break into a new dance partner. There's an adjustment period, and that's why it's hard to win the cup. I mean, there are times when you've got to win the cup when you might have to play a big, tough, hard team, like you're playing in Anaheim. You might have to play a fast team. You might have to play a trap team. You might have to play a team that loves to play that that in your nose physical. We're going to take you into the trench.
There you go.
Fast. You know, you've got to play a lot of different ways. And so teams that win it, teams that how to play lots of different ways. And knowing how to play lots of different ways, you got to have adjustments and serves.
How much credit does Randy Carlyle deserve in that game two for, you know, taking Andre Casa and sticking him in that first line with Richie and Getzlaff? You know, because it seemed to energize the whole team. Never mind the fact that Casa gets his first goal as well, his first playoff goal.
Yeah, I think there's been a number of times when you look at what Randy has done, whether it's moving from one line to another or their trick play off a face-off. Like they've had a number of coaching heroics that you haven't heard from in other series or other coaches. So, yeah, I'll give him full marks. He's recognized which players are going, which players he needs to have going, and which plays he's got to execute off of different face-offs. A serial matchup guy and probably in a better place second time round than he was the first time round when he would be considered a 14-carat dick. So he's much in a much better place now and much better suited for this group. And, you know, here you are, Final Four. No other game in town, so give him full marks.
Why do you say he's better suited for this group? Just because you've got a veteran core here? Or how? What would make you say that?
Well, you know, every generation of player, there's an evolution. You know, so when I first started, like you never even got up to eat in the food line at a pregame meal until the veterans had got their food.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that's happening today? Do you think Mitch Marner's waiting for Stefan Robidoux to get his plate before he gets up? I don't think so. And so all the way through, you have an evolution of players and what you can do to them. You know, the Mike Keenans of the world, could he work with NHL players today? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, I don't know. My spidey sense says no. So these guys have evolved, and you have to evolve with them. You can't coach like it's 2004. You can't coach like it's 94. You can't coach like when I started in 84. You have to find ways to get to players. You know, call a player, leave a message on his phone. You think you're going to get a call back? Text him. You get a message right away back.
Right.
You know, even our kids, look at the way our kids respond in this world, different than when you and I did it. So he has to find a way to get his message across to these players the right way, and he's got to find a way to get that message across to the way these guys understand it today. So there is an evolution. It's just not that you're a vet or you're a rookie. It's more that the game has totally changed in lots of different ways.
Glenn, how does that challenge change as you're going deeper and deeper into the playoffs? Like I'm thinking in the first round, everybody comes out like a rocket, right? And it's, you know, and everybody's fresh, or, you know, it's the end of a season, but they're fresh in terms of the playoffs starting and the intensity level's super high. But by the time you get into the second round, now we're into the third round, guys are beat up. They're tired. They've been challenged in a lot of different ways. I would think there's some kind of emotional dead spots along the way eventually. How do you kind of play through that? You know, it's not the kind of mini marathon that is the four rounds.
Well, I think it's more emotional, Stephen. Because you've got this far, there's so much at stake, and you know, then take it to the next round. Can you imagine getting to the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I can recall Murray Craven just on his knees crying by the boards after we beat them in 94, and I thought to myself, he lost two game sevens in the Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how hard is that to swallow? So here you are now. You're the only game in town. There's no other games on the banner up top in the rinks. You are one step away from achieving your dream. You know, a James Neal who, you know, was discarded by a team and devastated him. And I can remember golfing with him the day that he was discarded. And I said, hey, this is a positive. You're in a better organization. You've just got a pay raise because you've got less taxes. And you're going to get to play with some better players and you have a chance at a Stanley Cup. Well, don't I look like skin now? Yeah, bingo. So I think it's more the emotional toil just because they are as far as they are. And, you know, the World Cup is way behind them. That's just a long memory of the past. Preseason, what was that? What a joke that was. I actually nervous for a game in preseason. Regular season in October when this is a must win. Well, now they're at where like it's full state, all the marbles on the table. And I think, you know, that's what the coaches have to manage. The physical part is what it is. They're in great shape. Injuries are what they are. And at some point, maybe they bite a team. But it's more just that belief that we can win, the will to win. And I think the win last night for Anaheim tells them we can win this series. And I think that's the momentum that Nashville's got to counter with today.
Because it's a little bit of a lost opportunity for Nashville last night, too. You know, like if Freeney's a little better, you know, you've won two on the road, and you were on such a roll already in these playoffs, you'd be sky high, wouldn't you?
Yeah, new skates. He just forgot to take them out of the box. I mean, that was an adventure. I'll say it's an adventure for both goalies. You don't get that often. And so that's another reason I think Nashville goes, we had a gift. Because we had Gibson who was doing the same thing at the other end. So how do we not seize this? And boy, it makes a huge difference. Momentum in series makes a huge difference. In 94, when we were up 3-1 against Vancouver, and we were planning the parade route and getting people in, and what kind of champagne do you want to drink? And the next thing, it was 3-3. You don't think there was fear amongst guys that had won Stanley Cups like Mark Messier and Kevin Lowe? Absolutely. But we captured that fear, managed it, and found a way to find the will to win in Game 7.
Glenn, it seems that Vanaheim has decided that they're going to try to shoot high in Pekka Rinne. And this gets to your point, I think, a little bit about being in a playoff series. And you know, you sort of see the same opponent over and over again. And you get to see a guy on, you know, if not consecutive nights, then with maybe two nights between games. And you know, in the case of Pekka Rinne, if you're scouting him, you're seeing him all postseason long. If you're Anaheim, is it harder in a series for a goaltender to disguise a tendency or a weakness compared to the regular season?
Oh yeah, your regular season, you play an opponent, and the coaches will go down and do a breakdown of here's their power play, here's their penalty killing, here's how they break out. All right, we got a meeting at 5:30. See you guys. Have a good one. This one, you break down every goal. Mm-hmm. Break down where he plays the puck, how he likes to handle it, who he likes to put it to. You know, PK Subban, does he like to go to a lot of plays off his backhand? So force him to his backhand. That's not a very safe pass. Mm-hmm. He loves to do it all the time. So it's not just the goaltending, but it's absolutely every element of their team. I mean, and again, that's changed too. I can recall Mike Richter and I breaking down Ron Hextall together in the coach's office. We didn't even have a goalie coach. We're breaking down Ron Hextall. Okay, let's look at the last 50 goals and see where to beat him. All right, stick side looks like a good spot. We've seen about 20 there. And so they're doing the same thing with Pekka. And you know, he's such a big guy that the percentages are always with him. Even if you're close, he's mm-hmm. so big that he makes the save. And so is there a weakness in him? Oh, for sure there is. Will they exploit it? Absolutely. If two goals go in on his glove, yeah, that Sportsnet panel will be saying he's weak glove side. And next year he'll, you know, get awarded the Golden Glove and have the best glove in the league. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we tend to kind of make it up as we go along, but they're for sure they're going to try to expose every element of him and of that team over this 2-week little span.
What do you, Glenn? What are you expecting tonight with Penguins and Senators game two?
Kind of more of the same. But like anyone that's followed any Ottawa game versus Pittsburgh, Ottawa gives them a run all the time. They are pretty. Pretty competitive teams, both sides, and I think Ottawa, that's a real feather in their cap. I mean, that's one where for a couple days in between series, people had Pittsburgh moving on. They were the team that had no problem, Crosby, Malkin, all the star power. But I think what you saw from that Ottawa team was you exposed a defense that's not fast, that's thin, that's got some injuries. And when you look at like an Ali Mata, I mean, he had a 4-foot lead on Bobby Ryan. Bobby Ryan is no Cindy Clausen, okay?
Right.
And for him to take a couple steps and say, see you later, that shows you, again, when you start breaking down a team, how do we beat that team? Well, you just saw it in overtime. That's the weakness of the team. Forget the strength. You know they've got some strength up front. But that weakness at the back end with their injuries, you can expose it.
And we've kind of been waiting for that to be exposed on a consistent basis in the playoffs, haven't we? I mean, you know, Washington took advantage of it at times, but this appears, at least in that first game, it appears if the Senators figured out how to maybe turn that into a bit of a killing blow.
Yeah. You know, I've done a bunch of games with the Rangers where they played Pittsburgh during the year. I did one where they had 25 players on the ice for practice. Hmm. Half of their defense were out of the lineup, and I thought, well, it's easy picking for the Rangers. Rangers lost the game. And I thought, well, how did they let that go? Like, you don't have Trevor Daley. You don't have Olivia. You don't have your big guy in Letang, and yet you still couldn't beat him. Okay, well, that's different than the third round of the Stanley Cup final when the cherry blossoms are out, when Washington's done. You know, and that's a big factor, too. You know, you start looking at the teams that are left. Is there anybody that looks at one team that's left and says, oh, I wouldn't want to play them in the Stanley Cup final? No. Mm. The ground's been cleared. The field is as open as you can get. So if there's not an easier way to the Stanley Cup final this year than any other year, oh, this is it. This is a year where you don't fear any opponent. Anybody can.
The Senators in that first game took a lot of penalties. I think they took five minor penalties, four of them, bang, 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 in the first period. Now, Pittsburgh didn't capitalize on any of them. But is that something the Senators are going to have to guard against against Pittsburgh? I think Pittsburgh is the best power play in the postseason, but it's less than 20%. It seems as if power plays, I don't know, Glenn, it seems as if teams aren't scoring on the power play as much in the playoffs as they have in the past.
Well, you know what? It's almost like they have too many weapons.
Right.
You know, and I recall when we got Gretzky in New York. So we had Gretzky and Messier and Leach and Verbeek and Robitaille, and we almost had too many guys that could do stuff. So you tried to be too cute, and that's what I see in Pittsburgh, where you're Malkin, you're Crosby, you got so many weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you attack from, and how do you break down your opposition? Trust me, if they want to, they can. I would say, you know, don't die by the sword here. Be disciplined.
Right.
I know they're intense behind that Ottawa bench. I get it. You know, Boucher, I mean, when he calls timeout, he scares me. If I'm a referee, I go back quivering to the timeout coordinators. Yeah, I think he called timeout. He yelled something at me. So, but you can't take that personality on as a coach. You've got to stay, you know, on the edge, not over the edge. And I get that you want to take advantage of Crosby physically and Malkin, because these guys, that's not what they do best. But going to the box and giving a team 10 minutes of power play time, that to me is a recipe for disaster.
Glenn, we're going to let you run. Good of you to do this as always.
Gentlemen, have a good week, and we'll have some clearer answers come the next time we talk.